Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose with your host, John Stanko. This program will help you find your purpose and, more importantly, how to make your purpose work for you. And now, here's John Stanko.
Hello out there on this Holy Thursday of what is traditionally called Easter week. This is John Stanko coming to you with another edition of another episode of Wake Up to Purpose, which I've brought out of mothballs a couple weeks ago. It's been a few years, but thought the season was right, and I'm at home and have so many new stories and testimonies and things that I wanted to make available to anybody who was interested. And so we're back, and I'm back, and in a few minutes, Sharon Zealous-White is back. Sharon was a regular guest on my shows that I had on AM radio here. She's been on blog radio with me before and has graciously consented to give up some of her time today to be with us, and she has a fantastic story she's going to tell us. She's written a book called I Am Ready to Come Right Away, and so we'll be talking about that and many other things in just a moment when I bring her on. I trust that you are doing well, and I know that this is a very special week for believers all around the world. It's going to be a little different this year, but I see lots of creativity out there of how we are going to commemorate and celebrate and remember the crucifixion and the resurrection, and I know you will be participating at some level as I will be. We are going to do a show tomorrow. I won't do Facebook Live tomorrow, but we will be broadcasting at 5, and my friend Bill Rhodes is going to come on. He's going to interview me. And he knows my stuff better than I do. Sometimes I say something wrong that where something was, and he corrects me because he knows it very well. And so that'll be a lot of fun. And then we'll take the rest of the weekend off, be back on Monday. Lots going on in the world, obviously. Lots going on locally. The governor of our state announced no more school for the rest of this academic year, so the students are out and will have to be interfacing with their instructors from home, and parents will have to be, if they do return back to work, have to be figuring out who's going to be watching the kids and how all this works out. I saw an article in our paper that our local airport, which handles about 10,000 people a day, usually had 400 people flying yesterday. And, of course, they were about to break ground for a new airport, but all that is off. Plus, they said they're probably going to have to change the design to take into consideration the new normal of social distancing, which is not going to go away anytime soon. And so if you follow me on Facebook Live or any of the posts that I've done there, you know that I've been saying my impression is that this is going to go on for a while and that we're not going to return to normal. There's going to be a new normal. And God wants us to use these days to seek Him about what that new normal is for each of us and how we fit into His new normal, because nothing's going to be the same after this. Travel's not going to be the same. Healthcare's not going to be the same. Education's not going to be the same. And to the chagrin of some, church is not going to be the same. We have, in some quarters, been resisting the move towards social media. Now we are in, I couldn't get on this morning to Facebook to do a live broadcast because so many people and so many organizations were on. And I think that's great, but I think it's going to have long-term repercussions for ministry. I know when I talk like that, people immediately start saying, well, there's got to be a church. And I say, of course there is. But God wants us to use social media to so much more supplement what we do than how we have been using it. And I think there's a lot more for evangelism, broadcasting to the ends of the earth, so to speak, communicating with people, discipling people. All these things we can be doing through social media and not just through face-to-face. So, but that's not why we're here today. We're here in a moment to talk to Sharon White. Before we do, as is my custom on all my broadcasts, and Facebook Lives. I'm reading Psalm 91. And just for variety's sake, I am reading a different from a different translation. And I've been doing this for more than 3 weeks, and we haven't run out yet. So today, we are reading from the Passion Translation, and the title of Psalm 91 in this particular translation is Safe and Secure. So let me read this to you. When you sit enthroned under the shadow of Shaddai, you are hidden in the strength of God Most High. He's the hope that holds me and the stronghold to shelter me, the only God for me and my great confidence. He will rescue you from every hidden trap of the enemy, and he will protect you from false accusation and any deadly curse. His massive arms are wrapped around you, protecting you. You can run under his covering of majesty and hide. His arms of faithfulness are a shield keeping you from harm. You will never worry about an attack of demonic forces at night, nor have to fear a spirit of darkness coming against you. Don't fear a thing. Whether by night or by day, demonic danger will not trouble you, nor will the powers of evil launched against you. Even in a time of disaster, with thousands and thousands being killed, you will remain unscathed and unharmed. You will be a spectator as the wicked perish in judgment, for they will be paid back for what they have done. When we live our lives within the shadow of God Most High, our secret hiding place, we will always be shielded from harm. How then could evil prevail against us or disease infect us? God sends his angels with special orders to protect you wherever you go, defending you from all harm. If you walk into a trap, they'll be there for you and keep you from stumbling. You'll even walk unharmed among the fiercest powers of darkness, trampling every one of them beneath your feet. For here is what the Lord has spoken to me. Because you have delighted in me as my great lover, I will greatly protect you. I will set you in a high place, safe and secure before my face. I will answer your cry for help every time you pray, and you will find and feel my presence. Even in your time of pressure and trouble, I will be your glorious hero and give you a feast. You will be satisfied with a full life and with all that I do for you will enjoy the fullness of my salvation. Now, you know, that's not a superstition that I'm reading that. Okay, I've done something and now I feel better. God's going to protect me. No, it is an affirmation of trust in the Lord. And my trust is that he will protect me, and that if something gets through that protection, that he will heal me. And if something gets through that protection, then he will keep his promises, and I will be in his presence. So it's all faith. And so we just want to remind ourselves in this day and in this hour that no matter how much technology we have, no matter how much knowledge we have, an invisible virus can bring the world to its knees. But there is an invisible God who can also bring us to our knees, but for a whole different reason. And I'd rather choose the latter. I'd rather be on my knees worshiping him, and I know you would be too. Anyway, that's enough of the introduction. I want to go ahead and bring our guest on, one of my favorite people in the world, Sharon White. Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose. It's good to have you back.
Hi, Pastor John. It's great to be back. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, gosh, you know, this is my second week, and I put you down when I was making the list last week to get you on as soon as possible. We always love hearing from you. I love hearing from you, and I know our listeners will be too. Now, first, I just want to start. Tell our listeners a little bit about where you work now, what you do, and then give me a report of what you're sensing and seeing there, and how are people responding, any stories that you can share with us, but just tell us where you're working and then give us a report.
Well, I'm still currently employed at my church, Allegheny Center Alliance Church, which I have been for, it'll be 13 years coming this November. And it's been a great ride, and there have been some changes with the COVID-19, and things are stable there. We've had some changes as far as, you know, just like everybody else, all other businesses, some furloughs, and some you know, a cut back in hours, but things are we're still operating as a full church. It's been a little bit challenging with going online and working. I work half of my day at home and the other half in the office. And it's been different, but it's been the same because nothing about Jesus has changed. Okay, the environment, the way we do things has changed somewhat, but nothing about our Lord has changed. He is still in control. He's still on the throne. And none of this has caught him. He knew this from the foundation of the earth. And how wonderful of him to make a way for us to still stay the body of Christ without the brick and mortar through technology. And some people are afraid of that. Some people don't want to receive that. But look at it now. It's something that has helped us to stay full functional in our ministries to God's people.
It's a different paradigm. It's a different approach. But I've found it, Sharon, so interesting. God's basically taken everything away from us except social media. I mean, we even have gas in our cars, but we have no place to go. You know, because it's like God is making us face this instrument that some of the church, as you said, has been ambivalent about. You know, worshiping the last couple of weeks online. I mean, be honest. What's been like for you? Is it radically different? Are you receiving from it? What's your personal sense as you have entered in along with the rest of us into a worship experience that's more centered around social media?
Well, I've actually been in participating through the online services for quite some time. Not on and off, I would do it. I'm really busy. I have a really busy schedule. So sometimes I do like to take a Saturday or a Sunday off and just watch church services from my home. So it's not foreign to me. And I actually enjoy it. I feel the same impact of connectivity and being fed and receiving the word well. It hasn't impacted me at all. Now that I'm forced to do it, it feels a little different because I don't have the choice to get up and just go and do whatever I want to do. Now I am I have to sit there and watch it on the computer, but that's okay.
Right.
And I have to watch it alone. And before, it was my choice to do that, but now it's the Lord's choice. And now, for whatever reason and however he wants to use that, I am open to it. If we go back to the brick and mortar coming and going in the building, that's fine. But if God should choose to help us to reach the lost in ways that he sees best fit, I'm open to it.
Let me ask, how's your personal life? I mean, how's your family doing with this? Are you guys? I know you've had like group text and the you know where you've talked to one another through some of the situations your family has encountered that we may talk about later. But how's the family doing? How are they responding and reacting?
You know, the family is doing well. We do have a family group text that we keep in touch. Nobody really talks on the phone anymore, so it's best that we text real quick messages. We don't get around to visit much, especially now. But everyone's doing okay. They're doing as well as they can. My daughter-in-law is still in Georgia with my granddaughter, and she has another daughter now. My daughter lives up in the Northview Heights, and my two grandsons live close to me as well. We're all doing as well as we can. We just as yesterday was a tough day for all of us because yesterday my husband would have been 65 years old. So that was a bit of a challenging day yesterday. I didn't think it would bother me, but it did, and it bothered the kids. And, you know, so it brings up all those emotions and the what ifs.
But
other than that, we're fine.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Sharon White, who is just a rock and a mainstay in our congregation, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of her other ministries, but she serves our pastors and has, as she said, for 13 years. She's also the author of a book that we're going to talk about, I Am Ready to Come Right Away. But Sharon, before we get there, you have your own ministry organization. Tell us the name, tell us a little bit about what it does, and if you're doing anything with that ministry in these unusual times with the COVID-19 virus.
Yes, out of my many trips to Kenya, actually from my first trip to Kenya, God birthed a nonprofit. And I called it 5 James Foundation. It is named after my 5 loved ones who I had lost over a period of 3 years. My nephew, his name was James Dwayne Zealous, my son, William James White III, and my husband, William James White Jr., and then there was William James White IV and Jordan James White. Thus, the name 5 James Foundation. It is a nonprofit to benefit widows, orphans, and women. And I founded that nonprofit while my first trip to Kenya. I found 5 widows there. And I realized that my 5 loved ones had the name James. The book of James speaks strongly about caring for widows. And the book of James only has 5 chapters. So there.
There is the name.
I don't think that's a coincidence. I saw that as something that God wanted me to do and wanted me to use to minister to particularly widows, which is where it started and where it's ending right now. It was international for a while. I was traveling to Kenya, to Guadalajara, and I have some friends in Uganda that has have reached out to widows there. But God has now made it clear that I am to be locally treating, ministering, being his hands and feet to widows right here in our city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how are you doing that? And I'm especially interested, you know, because sometimes people think, you know, if I can't touch a lot of people, I won't even touch a few or won't do what it is that I can do. Talk about some of the things you're doing locally. And I think they're very practical, very doable, and they're ministering to a lot of people. Tell us about what you're doing to express your ministry in your community now.
Well, it started with my desire to find a ministry or a group that was particularly focused on widows. And so I had gone online and tried to find that, and there were some typical, quote-unquote, hookups, hangouts, and that wasn't what I was looking for. I was just looking to be with a group of women who understood where I am and was at that time. And I just happened to be invited to a Christmas party by a friend who had a friend, and I was the guest speaker, and the other friend was the entertainment, the worship leader. And we sat together, and she said, you know, my church has a widow's ministry. She said, it's the first one in Pittsburgh, and it was out of Christ Church. And I went there, and I enjoyed it. They embraced me. It was wonderful. And one day at one of our staff meetings, I said to Pastor Rock, why do I have to go all the way to a suburban church to be ministered to as a widow? And he said, we have erred. Why don't you start one? And I said, no, I don't think I should, because I need to be ministered to. So it was put under the leadership of our women's ministry under Adult Life. And initially it started out with ACAC taking the whole thing under their umbrella. And then God impressed upon me after I had lunch with your son one day that I didn't feel comfortable with the widows paying for the ability to attend the events and have the lunches. And God made it clear to me that those funds were to come from 5 James Foundation to reimburse my church for what they were paying for to minister to his women. And that's how it works right now. We are in partnership. I am in partnership with ACAC as we minister to women, widows. And they're not just widows within our church. We have almost, we started out with 10, and we're probably up to 40 widows now from within ACAC and from around the city of Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. And how do you connect with them? What do you do? How are some of the things you said, pay for things or events? What kind of events
are
you
having? Yeah, we have events. We go to Elizabeth Daigle and Julie Federer are the two women that spearhead the planning committee piece of it, of things that we can do and what we can do together. We've been to plays, lunches, trips up to fairs, to Shaker Woods, and just a lot of fun things that we can do together as women of what they call kindred spirit and support. It's not a support group. That's not what I ever wanted it to be. We already know we're sad. We already know we have needs. But we desire to be able to get out and feel comfortable being out and not feeling like we're a third or fifth wheel on other people.
You do some things with gift cards every now and then too, don't you?
I do. I Thanksgiving I send gift cards for the ladies, all 60 of them, for a gift card to Giant Eagle to purchase a turkey or whatever they want to do for Thanksgiving. I send gift cards for when someone calls me and says they're having a hard time. I've repaired 3 widows' roofs for them and other things. Bills, paid some bills. Some of the widows, one of our widows lost her home and helped her to pay her rent and utilities. But they wouldn't turn the utilities on until she paid the old bill. So, those are things that I help the ladies with. And it's not
now
me, it's the Lord. I don't have to do much of anything. I have a nice, strong group of people that continually send in money and support the ministry. I think it's going to be a bigger financial outreach to them coming with this coronavirus thing. Eventually, I'm going to be impacted by that with my ladies. And so I will be reaching out to people and asking people just as much as all other ministries need to be supported, so does 5 James Foundation will need to be supported just as much.
Did you ever think you would have your own organization and people would be giving to it?
Absolutely not. I have no business skills whatsoever, but like I said, I don't have to do anything. God just brings what I need to me. And it just works. It comes easily for me. I'm a business woman now. I am very business-minded, focused, and people always say, you're always doing something, going places. A lot of times I'm going places and doing things to bring in what I need to get to keep and maintain 5 James functional.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Sharon White, who is the founder and head of the 5 James Foundation, whose focus now is ministering to widows in the local area, but has also ministered to widows in Africa, in Mexico, and in other places. She's also the author of a book, I Am Ready to Come Right Away, which we'll be talking about in just a little bit. But Sharon, you mentioned Kenya, and I think as you tell your story, Kenya and the trip there played a pretty significant part, not just in 5 James, but in your own personal development, healing, ministry. Talk to us about how all that came about and what role Kenya played in this process.
God used my trip, my very first trip to Kenya, to begin the healing process for me after the loss of my 5 loved ones. And my husband died in 2009, and I went to Kenya with you in 2011. And you approached me in 2010 and said you thought the Lord was inviting me to go to Kenya with you and on a short-term missions trip. And I was completely broken. overweight, drinking wine, and just a complete broken woman. And I remember looking at you and thinking, yeah, sure, whatever. And you said, well, I think you should go. And I said, oh, I'll pray about it. And I said, maybe in 3 years. And you said immediately, you could be dead in 3 years. And it was that statement that kind of pierced my heart and kind of woke me up. And I realized that was true because of how quickly each one of them passed in the past, the previous 3 years. So that was a wake-up call for me. And eventually I did go on that trip with you. I don't recall much of it. I was in so much pain, and God used that time to speak to me. I couldn't hear him here in the United States. I always tell people, he didn't take me out of my city. He took me out of my state. He didn't take me out of the country. He had to take me off the entire continent to get my attention. And it was at that point in Kenya where I just remember being in the van a lot and crying and weeping quietly, but internally it was a deep, gut-wrenching cry. And that went on for however many days we were there, like 16 days. I don't remember much of the trip. I don't even think I was impactful, but that's where God began his healing with me. And it was when I came home that he started to speak.
Yeah. Now, there was something you did on that trip that you took a step, and maybe we could say drove a stake into the ground, because we were in the hallway in a hotel and we had a little presentation. Tell our listeners about that.
Oh, yeah. Before we left to go on that trip, it was Christmas. And we went in February, and it was Christmas and just before our trip. And I remember asking you, I said, you know, I don't want to do this whole Christmas thing, and I still don't do the whole Christmas thing. I said, I want to do something that's going to help somebody, and I don't know what to do. And you said, here, there was a link that you had given me. And he said, see if you find something on there. And it was connected to Kenya. And immediately this ministry to widows in Kenya popped out, and I thought, oh, that's perfect. Only God could do that. And I raised some money. You said, well, let's do that. And I raised money. We raised $1,200 for these women. We get to Kenya. We had a room reserved, and we got bumped out of that room do the presentation to them. And the next thing you know, we find ourselves outside of the Hilton Hotel, inside the Hilton Hotel, outside of the bathroom location. People were, and I'm giving this presentation, and the ladies are there, and people are, excuse me, going into the bathroom, coming out the bathroom. But it worked anyway. It was humbling. It was we couldn't have planned it that way, and I don't even think it could have been done any better than where we were.
It was so special.
It was so heartfelt, and it was it was a special time.
Yeah, now I remember it was the next year, the year after that, you had set a goal to raise some money, and I think you met that goal really quickly. And then you increased the goal, and you were able to really be a blessing to one of the pastors. Tell our listeners that story.
Pastor Peter was a pastor in Kenya, and he still is, who was the one who located these five widows for us to minister to on our trips there. However, he didn't have a car, and he would walk, if I remember, 8 miles to his church,
and then walk back home.
Walk
and take three buses, and you know,
it was
involved.
It was a mess, and so he had been praying for a car, and God impressed upon me to raise the money to buy him a car to be more efficient for him to minister to the Lord's church. And I raised, I think it was $15,000, was it? I think, for the purchase of the car. And the money came easily. I sent out letters and let people know what the need was for this pastor and for the widows in Kenya. And that money came so quick. And when we did the presentation to Pastor Peter, who had no idea that we were going to present him with the vehicle, it was the most moving, humbling. He was so humbled, and he was just so gracious, and it was just beautiful.
Yeah.
It's not anything that I did. It was the Lord's love for him, and that he would use what we were doing to minister to his pastor, who was caring for his flock over there in Kenya.
Yeah. Yeah, and
it was
amazing. That's how it is, and you made yourself available. You were a willing vessel, and God was able to flow through you and reach some other people that he wanted to bless, and you were in full cooperation with that. And it just was, I'll never forget those things. It was so special to behold them.
That was really special.
Oh gosh, it was worth the trip. And we could have gotten in the plane and come home after that. Now you went to Kenya with us a few times, but then Pastor Glenn came to you from the church and offered or suggested you do something there. Talk to us. That it was something a little different, and where that took you and what you did there.
I had been going to Kenya from 2011 up until 2016 was the last time I was there, and I thought I was to go again in 17, and I couldn't raise a dime. I mean, I probably raised maybe $300-$400, and it was shocking to me. It was crushing, and I just figured, okay, Lord, for whatever reason, you're not sending me back to Kenya, and I was okay with it. And then I was sitting at my desk, and all of a sudden, emails would come to me in Spanish for grief share, divorce care, and learn Spanish. And I was like, what is this all about? And then one day, Pastor Glenn came into my office and said, you know what? You know how he is. I believe God is telling me to invite you to lead a team to Guadalajara with Pastor Bob and Cheryl Fugate. And I thought, what? And I shared with him what I had been experiencing in terms of those emails coming. And at first, initially, I thought, oh, I don't know. You know, I don't speak Spanish. And I prayed about it, and yeah, I went, and it was a wonderful 2 years of ministry to, and not so much widows there. They were women caught up in trafficking and bad marriages or running from marriages. It was a group of women, but it was women, the needs of women there. It was a wonderful experience. I made some strong relationships there. And that lasted 2 years, and then 2 years later, I was no longer there. And that's when God impressed upon me that his ministries for the widows here in this community is what he wanted me to focus on for the past couple years.
Now, when you went to Mexico, you got to get a chance to speak, too. And you've done a little bit of speaking. How's that gone? You enjoy that? Do you think there'll be more of that in your future?
I do. I never thought I would do anything like that, that I had the skill to do that. But I'm learning as I go. Initially, they were opportunities to share my testimony, which was very tearful a lot of times. And I thought, nobody's ever going to want me to come back, because I would just weep while I would give my testimony. And after those years of sharing, pouring out the pain, and the pain not being so fresh and raw, that I was able to start presenting and sharing what I'm doing with 5 James Foundation. I was supposed to be at McKeesport Alliance Church on March the 21st, which marked 3 years of my grandson's death in the prison. The pastor had contacted me and said someone told him about me facilitating grief share, and he was thinking about opening it up to his church, but he wanted to have his people see or figure out or determine if they were the ones that were going to be called to lead that ministry. And so he wanted me to do a presentation. It was all ready to go, and he called me and said, let me I said, I don't know what date you want. You tell me. And he said, how about March 21st? He had no idea about my grandson's passing. And when I told him, he said, oh, maybe that's not a good date. And I said, no, I think that's the perfect date. I think only God could have planned that. And then the coronavirus happened. And so I just know that God used that moment to let me know that, okay, this is what we're going to be doing next, and it's going to involve you speaking at other places about the five James, the widows, and or grief.
And I welcome If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Sharon Zealous-White, who has been telling us about founding and working in the Five James Foundation, a nonprofit organization that she started. And she's also the author of a book, I Am Ready to Come Right Away. And Sharon, you started to make a good segue into discussing the book. You mentioned your grandson who died in prison. Talk to us about that story and the book and just what you think our listeners need to hear concerning that chapter of your life.
You had been asking me for a number of years to write a book, but I never felt that I felt that I did not want to profit from my losses of my family, and that's what I was feeling. And so when my grandson got arrested at the age of 18 and was sentenced to a harsh sentence at the State Correctional Institute on Pittsburgh, on the north side of Pittsburgh, he had been caught driving a stolen car, which he did not steal, and we had a really bad public defender, you know, with him being 18, never committed a crime, nobody was hurt, nonviolent, that I didn't need to invest in a good attorney. I just figured, you know, just a slap on the wrist, but our attorney was so horrible, and he got 4 to 8 years for a nonviolent crime that he actually didn't do, but district attorney was harsh in his sentencing because my grandson knew who stole the car, but he wouldn't tell. And, you know, most people don't realize that snitching is real and it has some consequences, and he knew the rules of the street, and he kept that to himself, and he ate that. And at 4 years into his sentence, he was diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma after presenting himself to the infirmary 2 years prior to that, complaining of pain. And once they got him to Pittsburgh and moved him to the north side, he was in Houtsdale, where that was his home prison, but when he got sick, they moved him to Pittsburgh. And 2 years after, you know, his diagnosis, he was dead. Right there in the infirmary with me and his mother at his side as he took his last breath. He was 23. And then I called you, and I said, you know what, Pastor? I believe God is impressing upon me to write a book about this, and not so much about all the other tragedies, but about the injustice the story about my grandson and who he really was. I wanted people to know who he really was. He was not a criminal. He was a sweet kid that just got caught up in something that actually cost him his life.
And the title of the book, I Am Ready to Come Right Away, how did that emerge? Where did that come from?
As he was deteriorating in his cell, and a lot of his inmates would help him as he was getting weak and wasn't able to care for himself. And he had requested, and they had to request in writing to be able to attend church services within the prison through the chaplain. And so he wrote a letter to the chaplain expressing his desire to come to service, but he was too weak, and that whenever he felt strong enough, he said, I am ready to come right away. And that letter impacted the chaplain, and she shared that story with us, and she wrote a beautiful letter at the request of Pastor Blaine asking for testimonies of his character from someone from the prison. And she wrote that letter, and she said that he requested to attend, and that he said, quote unquote, "I am ready to come right away when that time permits." And so that's why I called the book "I Am Ready to Come Right Away." It wasn't anything that he said to us. It was something he wrote in a letter, and she wrote a beautiful letter testifying to that.
Yeah, it is, and we include that in the book. But she wasn't the only one that was included in the book. This situation has touched other lives, hasn't it?
It has. Well, there was the nurse of the infirmary. Uh-huh. There was the assistant DA. When my grandson died, I wrote him a letter and asked how I can get my grandson's name expunged. And he wrote me a beautiful letter back expressing his sympathy and how he had not known that my grandson passed, and that you could tell that he's a man of faith by the words that he chose in his letter, and that he was deeply impacted by my grandson's loss, even though he was the attorney who, the district attorney who set the sentence and recommended that harsh sentencing for him. I wrote in the book and my acknowledgments. I acknowledged him and I let him, the judge, and everybody else that was involved know that there are no hard feelings towards them. We hold nothing against them as a family. It was an unfortunate situation, and they were just public servants doing their job, and it was just a bad situation for everybody involved.
Yeah, and in the book, there is no trace of bitterness, but you do talk about some of the inequities and the injustice that do exist in our criminal system, and your family experienced that firsthand, didn't you?
We did, and it started with the public defender's office. There is no excuse for public defenders to be serving the public, being paid by our tax dollars, and not doing their job, because he didn't do his job. He didn't do one thing. He actually showed up at the day of the trial without so much as a piece of paper involving my grandson's case. And it was at that moment I knew we were in trouble. I knew it.
Yeah.
But
And the whole sentencing process, too. I mean, it was a harsh sentence for a nonviolent crime.
Exactly. And even it involved a carjacking. Whoever did this, they carjacked the pizza man. And the pizza guy, my grandson was in the lineup, and he said, "None of these guys are the guy who carjacked me." But still they proceeded with the fact that he was driving the car, and there were three other kids in the car, but because my grandson was 18, he had turned 18 probably just a month before that, and he was driving the car, that they had a case to say that he was the person who carjacked him.
When
in fact the pizza person, the pizza guy said it wasn't.
Now you
the guy who drove the pizza delivery guy, he was white. My grandson was black.
And then we talk in the book a little bit about you don't want to get seriously sick in prison, do you? There weren't a lot of options. But it did bring your grandson home and closer to you, because this was the only facility here that had a hospital. Is that correct?
That's correct. When he collapsed in the infirmary for the how many time at complaining of this pain he was having, it was in Houtsdale, PA, that they took him to Altoona Hospital, and they realized that this was something that they could not treat. So they sent him to Shadyside Hillman, and all of this happened over 2 years, and we knew nothing about it until he was transferred to Shadyside Hospital Hillman. and he was diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a neglect, disregard,
mm-hmm.
and not an ounce of compassion for
mm-hmm.
and a young inmate who was 18 up to the age of 22 that he suffered through that prison system, and they never told us a thing. We didn't know anything until the year in which, the last few months in which he was able to be treated at AGH, and he died.
Yeah. Yeah, and you go on to tell a story of it. His funeral was you tell that story, and we've been talking to Sharon White, the author of I Am Ready to Come Right Away, a story of some personal tragedy that culminated in another loss of a loved one, in that her grandson, who was incarcerated, passed away after a battle with cancer that nobody knew he was really battling, and least of and the last ones to find out were his family. Sharon, I don't know if I've asked you this. You're involved in prison ministry at the church, or at least you were. Did that stem out of your grandson's situation, or is that just another interest that you had, and those kind of dovetailed together?
No, I started participating with the aftercare jail and prison ministry support
mm-hmm.
group long before my grandson even got
mm-hmm.
Involved
mm-hmm.
in that car incident.
Mm-hmm.
It was something I think God was preparing for me. You know, he goes before us.
Yeah.
He had given me a heart for those that were coming out of the prison. I wasn't involved with those in the prison, but those that were coming out and helping them to find their way back into society, how pointing them to jobs, housing, and how to go about getting their voting rights back and things like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And so being a part of that had a kind of set the tone for me with my dealing with my grandson in the prison. Because
mm-hmm.
listening to their stories, nothing caught me by surprise that my grandson had endured or experienced or shared with us over those 4 years.
Yeah. And let me ask you about writing and producing a book. How was the experience? What was that like?
But that was actually, it came very easy. You made it easy as my publisher, and I wrote out some things. We sat down. You interviewed me with a recorder, and then you would send the transcript to me, and I'd edit it and send it back to you, and then you'd edit it. And it didn't take long at all, which
mm-hmm.
surprised me. He died March 21st, 2017, and that book was on my desk. I called off March 21st, 2018, believing, you know, I wasn't going to be feeling like I wanted to be surrounded by other people. I needed to be with
mm-hmm.
my daughter and minister to her. When I got to work the very next day, March 22nd, Sheila, who I work with, my good friend, said, "Oh, you have a box on your desk that was delivered yesterday." And I said, "Oh, really?" So I opened it, and there was my first shipment of the books.
Mm-hmm.
1 year to the day that my grandson died, I had those books on my desk to sell.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's it been like now, you know, being an author and distributing books and getting feedback? What's that experience like?
Well, actually, I just got two text messages this week from Kimberly Abasian and Christine Simmons, and they almost both said the exact same thing. "I absolutely love your book." Christine said, "I carry it around with me. It helps me." She has a situation as well. She said, "It helps me through what I'm dealing with." And she said, "It has its funny moments. It has its heart,
mm-hmm.
gut-wrenching moments." But she said, "It has truth about the love of a grandmother and her grandson and a mother and her son. And she said it's a beautiful story. She said it's well written, both of them. And they want to go to lunch when we when this whole coronavirus thing settles down and talk about the book.
Wow.
It's still selling
and,
well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. I know it's based on just tremendous sorrow and grief, but you took a step and it is ministering to other people. I think you have an idea for another book, don't you?
I actually think God is speaking to me about writing another book because I received a proclamation from the city of Pittsburgh in
September. I was going to ask you about that, so go ahead and tell us about that.
For my work with in ministry with widows and orphans, and they acknowledged me, the city of Pittsburgh, the city, the very city that sentenced my grandson to a 4 to 8 year sentence, calls me back into their offices,
chambers,
and
be
acknowledged and receive a recognition for work well done. Only God can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, was it like 5 James Day? What did they, or was it Sharon
it
White Day?
It was Sharon Zealous White Day.
Oh, it was, and city council was there, and they made it a proclamation and took pictures, and we recorded it, and it was,
it was quite the experience. So I feel that God is using that experience to reflect on the disparity between, what happened with my grandson and how God used it to acknowledge what he's doing through me in ministry for prisoners, women, widows, and orphans, regardless of what the system said about my grandson.
Yeah. Sharon, we've got about 5 minutes left, and you've mentioned grief share several times. As we close, if you want to talk about that a little bit or just share any concepts of the process of grieving and mourning that could help any listeners who may not be as far along as you are in processing and far along as you are in the healing process, and I know this will be with you for the rest of your life, but anything to share with them that about grief share or about grief itself?
Well, I can tell you that grief is something that is required in order for you to heal. Most people think that they're not supposed to grieve, but what better way to express your love for someone than to grieve them? You don't want to stay there a long time, and that's what Grief Share teaches you, how to navigate through that journey of grief in a healthy way and not in an unhealthy way by way of not acknowledging it, not recognizing it, trying to self-medicate it, but to acknowledge it and present it before the feet of our Lord, who is the only person who can get you through that horrific period of life. However, like I said before, it is an expression of love to grieve someone you love. But you can't stay there forever. You have to begin to be able to move forward and to begin to live your life again in different ways and in different areas, but you need to move forward. And that takes years. It doesn't happen overnight, and time is not something that heals you. It is time spent with the Lord that heals you, and that's what I strongly encourage and enforce in my facilitating those groups. I've been doing it for going into three years. I absolutely love it. It's a good fit for me. And now we're doing them online. We had our first one online last night, which went really well. So we'll see.
High tech comes to grief share, I'll tell you. It's a new day.
Yes.
And Yeah. Well, Sharon, thank you. Your story always makes the hair on my neck stand up, and it's so moving, and I never get tired of hearing it. And of course, being there to see some of it and to see how God worked in you and how nobly you have behaved and how you have taken this these bad situations, and you really have turned your face outward to see who you can help, who's going through something similar, has been inspirational. It has been a role model for all of us to follow. And so thank you for sharing your life through the book. I know you're basically a private person. I mean, that's, and there's nothing wrong with that.
And now my life is an open book, literally.
Literally. That's exactly. But it's helped so many people, and for all of us who have watched it. Thank you for enriching our lives, and even for taking the time today, the day after, you know, what I'm sure was a very difficult commemoration yesterday of your husband who passed away, his birthday. But thank you, dear. God bless you. And I've got it down. We don't have to meet face to face to do the next book. We can facilitate it through the phone, and I need to follow up on that, be a little more diligent, so I'll be in touch.
Okay, Pastor. Thank you so much. It's always a joy and pleasure to talk with you.
Yes, and have a blessed resurrection weekend.
Yes.
And we'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely, Pastor. God bless you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, there you have Sharon Zealous-White, author of I Am Ready to Come Right Away, available on Amazon in Kindle and in paper copy. If you go to the show description on the Blog Talk Radio site, the title for the book is in pink. You click on that, it'll take you right to Amazon, or you can just go to Amazon and search Sharon. That's S-H-E-R-A-N. S-H-E-R-A-N, Zealous White, I Am Ready to Come Right Away. The story, it's really more than the story of her grandson's death. She does allude to some of her other losses. She talks also in the book about why this grandson was so close to her. He had spent a lot of time with her and her husband. And so I wasn't aware of the birthday that would have been yesterday. So I'm so grateful to Sharon to come on and share with us so close to what must have been a very painful day for her and her family. Well, I told you we were going to have a great show, and Sharon has a great story and shares it so well, and with no rancor, but with conviction and with passion, and she has every right to do that. Tomorrow we'll be back at 5:00. My friend Bill Rhodes is going to be interviewing me, and he wanted to submit me some, give me some questions, and I said, nope, just ask me what you want. So we're going to chat. We're going to let you listen in. Bill and I have been friends for almost 25 years. As I said, he knows my material better than I do. Be watching for me on Facebook. I won't do another live presentation till Monday, but I'll be writing and posting and encouraging. And if I can help you make your book project a reality, don't hesitate to get in touch with me. You can hear how to get in touch with me as we in the close of the show. This is John Stanko signing off from another episode. My thanks again to Sharon Zealous-White for her story. My thanks to you for listening. Until we're together again, this is your host signing off. Until we're together again, you be about the work of purpose in your life. So long for now.
Thanks again for listening to Wake Up to Purpose with John Stanko. To get in touch with John, you can go to www.purposequest.com or write him at johnstanko@gmail.com.